Let's get started, Larry, with the NATO summit. And if you were to mention the outcome of this summit for Ukraine, what would that be?
A nothing burger. So, what do I mean by that? They got contradictory signals with respect to eventually becoming a member of NATO, even though in the agreement it says, oh, yeah, you'll eventually get there. You're eventually going to become a member. There are at least two existing members that said, hell no, we're not letting them in. Fico of Slovakia was particularly emphatic on that front. He goes, we don't want to start a war with Russia. Are you crazy? So, no, we're not going to do that. So, from that standpoint, it was a, I think a disappointment, be a mild term for Zelensky. Zelensky learned that Biden didn't remember his name. He goes, I don't look like Putin. Why is he calling me Putin? They did announce, Blinken, that the F-16s are en route. They're on their way. As we speak, they're on their way.
Clapping, everybody was.
Oh, yay. Yeah, we're going to start World War III with nuclear weapons. This is terrific.
Unbelievable.
I mean, you just want to. You don't want to grab people by, my old Marine Corps boss called it the stack and swivel, by the necktie and stack them and smack them. Say, what are you thinking? Are you out of your minds? So, the F-16s, we still don't know what their disposition will be. They're not going to put them on a boat, on a ship, or on a train or a truck. They're going to be flown there. When they take off, if I'm Russian intelligence, I've already got intelligence assets stationed at each of those bases where in, was it Norway and Netherlands that they're going to come from, that are going to tell me when they take off, and we'll be able to track them. And then we're going to find out where they land. If they land in Romania and Poland, those will be two potential sites for a Russian strike. Because the issue with the F-16s is they are capable of carrying a nuclear-tipped cruise missile. It would be one thing if the West said, oh, under no circumstances are we going to even consider putting a weapon on those planes that could. On those jets that could run the risk of a nuclear confrontation. Absolutely. No, the West's not saying that. They're following the lunacy of a general, was it Wesley Clark? I believe it was Clark that was talking the other day about, oh, we need to promote strategic ambiguity. Okay. So here's strategic ambiguity. I walk up to you and I just, I get in your face, I look at you, but I don't say anything. Then I back off and then, I flex some muscles, but, maybe I bump into you, but I don't say anything. And then I hit you. That's strategic ambiguity. But here's unstrategic ambiguity, where there's an unambiguous strategy. I walk up to you and say, Nima, I'm going to kick your ass if you do X, Y, and Z. All right, I've spelled out what I'm going to do under what circumstances. Under those circumstances, you'd probably say, you know what? I'm not going to do those things. Therefore, we will not have a fight. And here's what Wesley Clark proposing. Yeah, we're going to have lots of ambiguity with the Russians. Let them think that we might have nukes. You're going, are you crazy? Have you lost your friggin' mind? The very last thing you want to do with a nuclear power is leave ambiguity, uncertainty, questions. I mean, how these kinds of people could get promoted to senior positions in leadership and be this abjectly stupid is a mystery to me. But, so that's That's the other thing that's come out. Oh, and I'm going to do a test of you now. This is not designed to embarrass you, because I'll tell you the punchline after I ask you. Do you know what SEATO is? SEATO.
No.
SEATO was the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. It was designed to be the twin brother of NATO. Started up in 1954, I believe. And it had the United States and Canada and Australia, New Zealand, and by God, and maybe South Korea. And, oh, we're all going to get together and fight those commies. That was what they're talking about back then. Seemed that as they got into SEATO, they wanted to, the Americans had the idea of, hey, we started this war in Vietnam. We'd like everybody to come join us. Yeah. And everybody was like, yeah, not such a, you know, South Koreans did some, the Australians did some, but everybody said, this is really not a good idea. SEATO died in 1975. And so you're asking me, why am I asking about SEATO? Because NATO is going to resurrect that sucker, but they're not going to call it SEATO. They're now saying NATO is going to turn to China. And that's why they had the South Koreans and the Australians in as observers. God, these people, they don't learn anything from history. Out to repeat the same stupid stuff. And so that was another result of the NATO meeting, that they've identified the number one threat in the world is Russia? No, it's China. China, let's go down that long list of countries they've invaded over the last 40 years. That would be none. But they're a threat. They are a global threat. They're not only a threat to the United States, they're a threat to Canada, they're a threat to Australia and to Europe. Oh my God, to Europe. The Chinese are going to overrun Europe with fortune cookies, and they got to be stopped. If we have any more wonton soup, the Europeans are going to die. I mean, please, what is wrong with these people? It is just, it's a symptom of, this is an organization, NATO is the quintessential example of dysfunction. Because it, and I would describe it as a congregation of midgets, but that would be an insult to midgets, because midgets can actually be big people and do big things. These are little people doing terrible things and thinking they're ultra important. When you know, NATO likes to believe that it is God, we are a powerful alliance. There are, how many of us are there? You know, what, 29, 30, 31? The numbers keep going up. Well, but we're powerful. So, Germany, roll call. How many soldiers do you have active duty? Oh, we got 57,000. Oh. And French, how many you guys got? About 118,000. Oh. And the Brits, we know, they got 70,000. Okay, so I know you. You got like an engineering background, good on math. So, you know, you can add all that up. We're up around 170, 240, you know, close to 250,000 men. Add in the United States with all of its active duty forces, 452,000. And then we throw in the Marines, that's another 170,000. So right there, we're getting up close to 800,000-900,000. Well, Russia alone has 1.3 million active duty soldiers. And these numbers I'm giving you, and are assuming that every Tom, Dick, and Harry and every one of these countries' or armies is somehow deployed forward to fight in Russia. Okay? And it's physically, they don't have the numbers. Because under conventional military theory, an attacking force must have a decided advantage of a 3-to-1 advantage. So if Russia's got 1.3 million, that means NATO's got to have come up with about 4 million bubbas to go carry out that mission. They don't have it. They couldn't have it if they recruited. Well, okay, I take that back. If they bring in Nigeria and maybe Indonesia, Malaysia as members of NATO, and promise them all sorts of benefits, then they could probably come up with an army that size. Except the people in Nigeria, Malaysia, and Indonesia are not that stupid that they'd be bamboozled by that kind of bogus offer from the colonialists. So this was really, they wanted to call it a celebration, 75th anniversary. I've been to some 75th birthday parties lately. They're all about old guys, old men, old women, not in their prime. And in many respects, that's exactly what this 75th NATO celebration was like. Certainly not in its prime. I think those were the major accomplishments or lowlights from this affair, apart from the fact of Joe Biden displaying his masterful intelligence, calling Zelensky Putin, and then doing bombing at the press conference.
Yeah, it seems that in the United States they're trying to change the law of conscription because volunteers are not that good. That's why they're manipulating the law after decades. And what's the necessity of that? What's because people are not willing to fight?
Yeah, time to bring back Country Joe and the Fish. You know who Country Joe and the Fish are? The group that sang at Woodstock? Well, it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. Yeah, so we're going back to that. Sorry for the musical interlude.
No problem.
Yeah, but. Yeah, people aren't signing it up because, part of it is they're seeing all these ads for wounded warriors and AMVETS and all these veterans missing legs and arms. And I'm not laughing that they're missing legs and arms, that they're mangled beyond almost human recognition. But people that do see that on social media doesn't say, "Hey, man, I got to do what they were doing. That looks like fun." It doesn't look like fun. There's a charitable organization called Tunnel to Towers, and they always show these heart-moving ads, but it's always guys who don't have legs and arms are having to build homes that can allow wheelchairs to get through and bathrooms that they can have all these bars to hang on so they can somehow wash and clean themselves. I mean, it's horrific. That's what war brings. Secondly, the entire culture of the United States has been feminized, even though we live in a culture now that refuses to admit that there's any such thing as a real woman, that men can be women, frogs can be women, who knows? The reality is there is an overload of estrogen in the society. A deficit of testosterone, and a lot of boys will stay in their homes playing video games instead of running out, doing sports, running through the woods, developing any kind of physical strength and endurance. So consequently, you got a bunch of plus the junk food that people consume, all the different fast food that you're propagandized with from the time you're a baby. Kentucky Fried Chicken, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, go down the list. Your diet's so bad that you've eaten all this crap food for so long that they're not, they're fat, overweight, can't even do a pull-up. So the army is they can't recruit people. So the only way that they set their goal. I think last year it was like 470, 475 thousand for the army. They missed the recruitment goal. And so I think we talked about this in one of your other shows. This year they've made it. They're on track to make their goal. So Nima, how are they making their goal? Do you know?
Not at all.
Yeah, see, you're too honest. What they did is they lowered the number they wanted to recruit. Okay, they said, all right, forget about that 475,000. We just want 450,000. Okay, so they're basically recruiting 25,000 less, but by God, we're making our goal. So when you have a military organization that lies to itself like that, and it's involved with self-deception, it's no surprise they say, yeah, nobody, no wonder people don't want to join us. We suck.
Yeah. When you look at the attitude of NATO right now, we had the SCO summit right after that, and nobody was talking in the mainstream media about the SCO summit, the importance of what has happened there and what were the highlights of this summit. And right after that, we had the NATO summit. It seems that as much as they wanted to ignore the SCO summit, they were reacting to SCO summit.
What's the SCO summit? Sorry. Was there a summit? Yeah. So, I mean, so the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Yeah, what we're witnessing, it's one more international movement that has been designed to create an alternative narrative to the UN and to NATO. And the SCO, it looks like what I'm seeing and hearing is at some point, all these different organizations, SCO, the International Russophile Movement, the BRICS, they're all going to become one. And I anticipate that we're going to see actually the rise of an alternative to NATO. Or, excuse me, to the United Nations. Either the United Nations, especially the Security Council, is going to have to change and allow other countries like India should be a permanent member of the Security Council. Maybe Brazil. And then a country in Africa, largest one is what, Nigeria, I think, or South Africa. Anyway, some country, because right now all they have is basically all the colonial powers except for Russia and China. The rest of it is France, England, and the United States get to control, and it's just not fair. So if that's not reformed at some point, I see them spinning off into BRICS, SCO, because the SCO attracted a significant number of countries from around the world. And as I recall, I think Turkey showed up at that too. And Belarus did, I think. So this is it's reaching out beyond just being an Asian organization, and it's exactly what it says. It's looking at the cooperation on the economic front principally, but also militarily, politically. And that's where the United States is living in this bubble that we think we still control the world. And the rest of the world's moving on. They've really had enough of the U.S. bullying, at least a significant, the countries that matter. Yeah, and yeah, I'm being, I guess that's not, can't call it racist. Am I being countryist? I am discriminating against countries. Gabon, Benin, these little bitty places, you know, they don't really matter in the nature of the world. They matter because they have human beings in it. Same thing for Nauru, Vanuatu, these little islands out in the middle of the Pacific. But when you're looking at countries like the current BRICS nations, their total gross domestic product exceeds that of the G7. A few years ago, the G7 was it. There was no other economic organization, and really G7 sort of a, let's call it a front for NATO, or NATO as its military arm. You know, 20 years ago, G7 was the dominant force. Not anymore. The BRICS countries are passing them. And that gap is only going to grow wider. That's what people don't understand. And yet the West, in its supreme arrogance, just looks at the US, why, it doesn't matter. Why should we go to that? Stupid.
One of the important points that Orban made after his visit of China, his visit to Ukraine, Russia, and China, he said that when he went to China, it was all about peace talks, it's all about negotiations. When he comes to the United States, it's all about the policy of war, after war. It's unbelievable, Larry, because at the same time, we are witnessing that Putin went to North Korea. Right now, China in Belarus doing some exercises. Right now, Russia and China doing together a joint military. But they don't seem to get more aggressive toward the West. They're preparing for something. Do you think that they're afraid of the West attacking them?
It's a critical point with respect to the military exercise, China and Belarus. They didn't just dream this up in the last month, okay? You know, Xi Jinping didn't call up Lukashenko and go, "Hey, Luke, Bubba, how about we get together in a month and I'll bring my soldiers over to your country and you bring and we'll do exercises. We'll, you know, jumping jacks, push-ups, you know." No. The planning for this started 18 months ago or before. So the point of this is that the Chinese, the Russians, and Belarus, they're thinking strategically, they're thinking long-term, they're thinking in terms of relationships. The way the West reacted to this exercise news was as if it had just been created and they were reacting to what the United States is doing right now. No, that's not the case. These countries are recognizing that they can no longer partner with the West. And as you know, we talked about at the start of your show, the one message that came out of the NATO summit was that China is the big enemy of the world. Now, I'm not arguing that the Chinese have a perfect human rights record, that they are not out there stealing technology from other countries, but for God's sake, the United States, France, Germany, any of them, if they had a chance to steal technology from another country, well, we're not out there going, oh my God, no, we can't take that. That would be spying. We don't spy. Please. You know, it's just the hypocrisy. The hypocrisy level is just off the charts. So, you know, the Chinese, they're going to protect themselves. They've recognized that the West is a genuine threat. What else are they supposed to believe? They've just seen all of these countries in Europe with the United States and Canada come together and declare that that they, China, are the enemy. And that they all ought to work together to hurt China. I mean, you know, think about it in your neighborhood. You know, if you're living in your neighborhood and you find that all your neighbors get together and say, "Man, that Nima, he's an asshole. And boy, we're gonna make sure we run him out of the neighborhood." Would you ignore that? You'd go, "What did I do? I cut my grass, you know, I keep my trash out of the other neighbor's yards. What's the point?" And you know, so this is the West provoking China. And but it, but I, again, look at that exercise with Belarus. That's a sign that China is well aware of this provocation from a year and a half ago.
They were talking about that Japan is a tacit member of NATO. What does it mean, Larry, when they're talking in this way? Do they really want to expand NATO to the to Asia? And what would that mean for...
Yeah, they do. I mean, you know, like that's why I talked about CETO at the outset. They're trying to recreate CETO, but without calling it CETO. So they'll call it, it'll be NATO light.
So or, it doesn't...
NATO Asian.
So it's supposed to be a defensive organization, not an offensive. It's all about offensive.
There you go, trying to define words. What's wrong with you? Okay. Don't you realize that in the world of diplomacy and military skullduggery, words are simply to be manipulated and used any way you like? So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It was supposed to be a defensive organization. Except when you look back at it, you know, so NATO was conducting military exercises through EUCOM in the Black Sea for several years. I don't recall if Seabreeze was strictly NATO or if it was strictly EUCOM, but there was some NATO involvement. So in this Seabreeze exercise, one of the things they did, they simulated the landing of Marines, U.S. Marines, and landing craft that would come off of ships that would carry the landing craft, and then they would land, simulating an attack on shore. Does that sound offensive to you? No. That's an offensive action. That's what they were doing. But always under the guise of, well, we're reacting. We are defending something. So there's also, I remember Yavoriv, the one base that was bombed early on, March 13th of 2022. I do really got that date engraved in my brain. That was a de facto NATO base. And shortly after that place got blown up, there was a UCOM used to have a page talking about all of its training activities at Yavoriv, which is in Western Ukraine. They took it down. But I remember one of the elements from that page was about that Yavoriv, they were using cybersecurity and they were teaching offensive cybersecurity. In other words, using cyber warfare against, God, who would they be using it against? I don't know. Ukraine, maybe the Russians. So, you know, this, that's where, you know, NATO lost its way. It is, it's in theory an offensive entity claiming that it's only going to react in defense. If you punch us first, then we're going to come in and just beat the tar out of you. But the reality is they've been training all along. If you're a Russian military observer and you're watching the NATO forces train, you can only come to one conclusion. They're getting ready to attack us. And we got to be ready to stop them.
When you hear that the United States wants to send long-range missile to Germany, and it's in Germany, so happy about that. They're saying that they're so happy right God now. Almighty, huh? What would be the outcome of this type of behavior on the part of the United States? Because it doesn't seem this type of actions would end well for them.
Did you ever read the book 13 Days? About the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Yeah.
Okay. Take that book, and at the end, instead of ships withdrawing and taking missiles out, paint big mushroom clouds going up as the world, or take 13 days and combine it with the end of the movie of Dr. Strangelove. Do you remember that, where the one actor is sitting, he's riding the nuclear bomb down, Slim, what's his name, waving his hat like a cowboy riding a rodeo horse. And then the bombs start going off and you hear the music, "We'll meet again." You know, they start. That's what we're looking at. The idea that the United States can put nuclear capable missiles in Germany and that the Germans think it's a good idea. We went through this before. That's why we had the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Agreement, INF, to keep either side from blowing each other up. And as soon as the West does that, the Russians are going to respond. And the Russians will respond in the same manner that the United States wanted to respond, at least some wanted to respond, when the Soviets started building nuclear missiles in Cuba. I mean, good God. These are not children. These are adults. They're supposed to have better sense than that. And they are literally playing with the survival of this world.
The other news that came out, it just says that the United States is developing a high-precision aerial munition specifically for Ukraine. And
a hypersonic or high precision?
High precision.
Okay. Yeah.
And Larry, the way that there you see that it's in the mindset of NATO, they're thinking of the continuation of the conflict. But do you think the way that they're fighting the war in Ukraine, are we going to have a country called Ukraine by 2026?
I don't think so. Or if it is, it's going to be like it'll be like Albania. It'll be dramatically reduced in size. Dramatically. I mean, we can't call it, it'll be the poorest country in Europe because it reportedly was already the poorest country in Europe. So they're going to be, they'll be in for some tough times, but they're going to be, I think, cut off from the Black Sea. They're going to be landlocked. And population wise, they're going to be down below 20 million, probably around 15 million. So how do you recover from that? You don't. It is Ukraine really does not have a bright future. It's been a victim. It's like getting fleeced by the mafia. There was a I always like to put it in movie terms because people can relate to that. So if you ever watched the television series The Sopranos, so one season there was this episode where the father of one of Tony Soprano's daughter, he owned a sports store, and he liked to gamble, and so he started gambling, and his losses went up, so he started taking loans from the mafia. They weren't very good terms. And the funny thing about those guys is they want to get paid back. And then all of a sudden, when it came time to get paid back, mafia shows up. They're looting the store. They're ripping them off. The guy gets divorced, loses his car, sleeping in a tent at the store. That's where Ukraine is headed. They're being decimated in that same way. They got in bed with the West and, you know, listen to Biden. We're with you till the end. What they didn't know is Biden's going to show up like next week and go, "Hey, Zelensky, this is the end. Good luck." I said we'll be with you till the end, and this is the end. Hey, bon voyage. There's no commitment. And people that doubt that, all they got to look at is all the different refugee communities that have trusted the United States policy promises that all now live in the United States. You got Cubans, you got Thais, you got the Hmong, you know, Cambodians, you got Afghanis, you know, Iraqi, down the list. So that's where Ukraine's headed.
The army of Ukraine still believe in Zelensky and what he's doing right now, or they're going to find a way to just deal with Zelensky and this phenomenon that they're having right now in Ukraine?
Well, they're going to find a scapegoat. It sounds like Zelensky is looking to turn Sursky into the latest scapegoat. Remember, he's the one that replaced Zaluzhny. I guess this is, Zelensky's way of forcing the world press to learn how to spell a variety of different Ukrainian names. You know, get comfortable with Zaluzhny, then you have to shift to Sursky, and God knows who's next. I guess I've been surprised that there has not been a formal military coup against Zelensky. And that may be because the United States is threatening to hold back other military support if they do it. But he certainly does not have widespread support within the military at all. And, I think they're going to, the Ukrainian military is going to reach a critical stage here pretty quickly, where they'll no longer have the personnel that are trained that they can move from position to position to try to reinforce areas that are weakened because of troop losses.
The other thing that Stoltenberg was talking about, that if we want to have a better deal for Ukraine, we have to provide them with weapons. And that's why they're going to have a better deal, better negotiation with Russia. And nobody knows how would Ukraine benefit from more weapons if it's a bad sign for Russia.
Yeah, well, no, it's just, it's a matter of, you can provide the best weapon system in the world. If there's nobody there to operate it, then what good is it? So just 3 days ago, John Hemmer of Dances with Bears reported that the Russians had taken out 3 HIMAR launchers and in the process killed 35 foreign experts. It was interpreted as code word for Americans. The only way the United States, United France, England, Germany could make any difference with their weapons, and by difference, I mean just to make sure that they could be fired, might cause some damage, is to bring their own trained personnel in to operate it, and then try to train Ukrainians in the process. Problem with that is the Russians have demonstrated they can find you and kill you. You're seeing an uptick in that, where the Russians are becoming more aggressive in going after these systems. So there's nothing, the one thing that Ukraine needs in order to be a credible challenge to Russia is they need about 500,000 trained, combat-tested soldiers. So they don't have that, and they're not ever going to get that. So without that, they're into this death spiral where they grab any recruits they can, they put uniforms on them, they shove a gun in their hand. They may, if they're lucky, get 2 to 3 weeks of training, and then they're launched off to the front. And once they're at the front, they get killed, because they really don't know what to do or how to fight.
How did you find this attack on Children's Hospital in Kiev?
Do you know who Bellingcat is?
No.
So Bellingcat is this, I forget the kid, Elliot, was it Elliot Higgins? So he's a Brit. He's some nerd from a basement. He specialize in video games, for all I know. And about 12 years ago, he started writing about what was going on in Syria. And very quickly, you realized he was a social media mouthpiece for British intelligence, MI6. And he was getting financial support, to my understanding, from, let's call it, UK and US intelligence sources. But now he's become, he's moved off out of the UK, moved into the Netherlands or Brussels, one of those. And Bellingcat is now like an organization, but they're a propaganda organization. What does this have to do with Children's Hospital? Bellingcat immediately came out and said, "Oh yeah, that was a Russian missile. That wasn't a Ukrainian air defense missile gone awry." I beg to strongly disagree. And the reason I strongly disagree is the fact that that story of the bombing of Children's Hospital was picked up immediately across the spectrum. Every major newspaper in the UK, every major newspaper in the United States, including the major, all the legacy media news programs, as well as the cable news programs. It was picked up on Al Jazeera. It was picked up on Sky News. Oh my God, the Russians are killing children. Remember when those Israelis were killing children on a daily basis? You remember how all the international press got up? Oh my God. No, they didn't. Hardly covered. Remember the children that are killed with regularity? Just yesterday, five boys were bombed with a Ukrainian drone in Belgorod. Remember all the press coverage that got? Me neither. So what you saw here was a deliberate information operation to, they're going to blame Russia for this regardless. The thing is, the blast did not destroy the hospital. The Russian missile would have destroyed the hospital, number one. Number two, it was a picture, and the Brits tried to dirty this picture up, claim it was a fabrication or something, but the profile does not fit the Russian missile. So it was most likely what's called a NASAM air defense missile that Ukraine fired, and it missed its target and wound up coming down, hitting the hospital. And they killed a couple of kids, but not many. And part of that's due to the fact that the explosive head on it was not real big.
This new report that shows 40% of all semiconductors of the weapons in the United States come from China.
China, yeah.
It's unbelievable, Larry, how when you look at the companies, you see Lockheed Martin, you see the Raytheon, Boeing.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Hey, that was back when we were trying to be the best of buddies and friends with the Chinese, you know. And so to that end, we are happy to ship and start having those financial relationships with them. Which, again, is just crazy. So now what do we want to do? Now we're saying we want to go to war with them? We want to start a fight with them? Yeah, they're really smart guys. That's really smart. You can't, you can't make this stuff up. The fact that the United States now is utterly dependent to the point of being crippled if it went to war, and yet is talking about going to war with the very country that it's dependent upon. You know, that's not called strategic thinking. That is the most shallow of thinking. I don't even think there's even thinking involved. It's just, you know, this is like, you know, caveman, you know, me hungry, want fire, you know, no, want chips. Do you understand where they're made? And do you understand that you need to have a good relationship with the Chinese? Or they may just tell you, hey, you can go buy elsewhere. You're not getting our chips anymore. Screw you. I'd love to know how to say that in Mandarin, but, you know, but, you know, it's remarkable that, but step back and ask yourself, what was the best weapon system that the United States gave the Ukrainians that has really made a difference on the battlefield? Can you name one? Me neither. So what the United States has is a lot of weapon systems that are technologically old, or they're chronologically old. They were, you know, created 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Been updated somewhat. But on the modern battlefield, the HIMARS has been defeated. The Patriot missile system has been defeated. Storm Shadow's British. It's not us, but still. ATACMS is, you know, running into trouble. You've got, you know, the Leopards, the M1 Abrams, I guess, stick with U.S. equipment, M1 Abrams, Bradley fighting vehicle. None of it's so exceptional and so special that it's a game changer. Now, the drones look like they are a game changer, particularly in how they're being used, you know, one-way suicide drones. And there's a race on from both the U.S. NATO side and the Russian side to build up software that will allow these to deploy using what is artificial intelligence. So you could literally, I don't know if you've ever stepped in a nest of fire ants, and those fire ants swarm you pretty quick, and they bite and itch and burn like crazy. Can kill you if you get enough bites, if you're allergic. Well, that's where they're headed with missiles, with drone technology. Because drones, man, they don't cost as much to train one soldier. And if that drone gets shot down, you can go get another one, you know, pull one out of the box. So the West and Russia, China, and Iran are in sort of they're in a race to see who can produce the most drones, the most effectively, the quickest. And despite the belief in the United States that we've got an advantage over Russia, China, and Iran in this regard, I don't believe that for a minute. I think it's just the opposite. I think we're behind. And not that I'm using that language not to suggest that we need to catch up. But we are at a disadvantage if we choose to rely upon that as our primary means of attack in the future going forward, because it could lead to our destruction. So, but that, you know, the Russians are moving on that front quickly. The Iranians are making bigger drones. You know, they've already got one drone that they shot down, or they were able to down a U.S. Predator drone, I think it was, some years ago. And boy, they went to town on it. They've made copies. Technologically, you know, their attitude is, hey, anything worth doing well is worth stealing from someone else.
Did you see this new article in The Lancet? Women and children, mostly women and children, were killed.
People have been misstating what the research says. That's a projection. They're saying that when this war is over, that the death toll could be that high because of the women, children, elderly that are buried under the rubble, or that will die because of lack of medical care. There is I don't know if you've seen this video. This little girl, she must have been 8 or 9. Her jaw this entire part of her mouth is bloody. It's just mangled skin hanging open. So you look at her and you realize right away, how's she going to eat? She does not have normal movement now of her jaw. So she can't chew with teeth. So right away, and it's not even clear that she's got an open passage to the esophagus that she can intake food and keep it down. So if they don't get medical treatment to her, if they're not able to put in a feeding tube, and if they don't have food to put in that feeding tube, she'll die. So that's an example of what the Lancet's talking about, of additional casualties beyond those that are killed in the initial strikes where bodies have been recovered. I don't think that number is outlined at all. I think it could possibly be higher. That sure make the Israelis happy, because that's what they want. They want to exterminate the Palestinians.
But the hatred that this type of articles would make among the public opinion in the world, that would be huge, and a huge burden on Israelis. And
they don't care. I mean, you're thinking logically and rationally. That's your weakness, man. And it's a compliment. But no, the Israelis don't care. They want to exterminate the Palestinians. The more dead, the better. And screw the rest of the world. They don't care what the world thinks at all. Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. And we talk about what has happened on October 7th for various times, but right now, Haaretz reported that on that particular day, Israelis were killing Israelis. And
yeah, well, yeah. I mean, we've known this. You know, those of us who've read and followed Max Blumenthal and Aaron Maté, they wrote about it at the Gray Zone months ago. I think right, it may have even been right initially in October, and they were immediately attacked by Haaretz, of all people. You liars! Well, now Haaretz did not have the grace to apologize, but they confirmed the story. And, you know, I've maintained, you know, there, you get on some shows, if you've watched, like Piers Morgan, and I don't recommend anybody watch him. He's a moron. He's a twit. But he spends time in badgering people like, yeah, well, it was a terrorist attack on October 7th. No, it wasn't. It was a military attack by a paramilitary group who targeted primarily military targets. And then the rave, that music festival in the desert, when it broke up, and you know, there were gunfights there because there was a security element at that rave event, and the Palestinian fighters, the Hamas fighters flying in, engaged them, and I'm sure there were some civilians killed that were innocent. Would that be considered a war crime? Okay, we can call it a war crime, and if that's our standard, let's line up all the U.S. soldiers that killed all the civilians in Vietnam and Korea and throughout Europe. And I mean, you know, we go play that game. Want to? But when the Israelis implemented the Hannibal Doctrine, credible, multiple reports of them using tanks against a house that had Israeli hostages in it. Hamas was taking hostages. They were going to hold them as bargaining chips to get their own people out of jail. You may say, hey, that's a bad thing to do. But, you know, what the Israelis are doing is bad, too. And so, you know, it's one of the harvests that come from those kinds of evil acts on the part of the Israelis. But the Israelis blew the house up, killed 13 of the hostages, including babies. Now, it's not clear who gave the ultimate order to do it, but we do know that this general who was on scene, he gave the order. Now, did any of his superiors direct him to do that, or did he do it on his own? That needs to be investigated. But then he got all these cars from the music festival. They've been shot up with, you know, HARM missiles or some sort of a air-to-ground missile. And, you know, the Israelis that were in those cars were killed. So that's why I maintain that of the total number killed that day, we have 1,150, maybe 170. My view is well over 600 were killed by Israelis. The Israelis killed more than half of their own casualties.
Larry, do you think this type of reports on the part of Israeli media arts would cause some sort of backfire on Netanyahu and his administration, or is not going to have any sort
now,
of...
No, because the Israelis don't care. Hey, the only ones that care are the hostage families, and they're a minority. The rest of the Israelis are more interested in killing Palestinians. And they're going to be in denial. You know, it wouldn't matter if you brought out a video that showed an Israeli soldier raping Mother Teresa. It'd still go, that's not happening. That's irrelevant. That's not important. So unfortunately, truth is a casualty.
I last week, Larry, I talked with a journalist in Lebanon. His name is Leith Maruf, and he said that right now Hezbollah is totally prepared for any sort of escalation on the part of Israelis.
Yeah.
And he said that what's amazing that the Sunni and Shia are so much connected right now, and they're totally prepared for that.
Yeah, I did an interview with Zainab Safar, who's she's born in Iraq, raised in Lebanon, in Lebanon. I guess she went to elementary school in an evangelical Christian school. But she is a devout Muslim. And I asked her specifically to try to explore some of the issues that might or had reported surfaced between Sunni and Shia. And she didn't want to even go there. She said that's really not relevant, and it's we're not interested in being divisive. And she was but she was being very upfront that it doesn't matter. It's like they're saying that they can get along. It's not a deal breaker that they both accept they believe in God. So they go from that standpoint. They're not going to worry about some of the other doctrinal, theological issues that could separate them.
When we look at the outcome of this conflict in Gaza, Netanyahu wanted to destroy Hamas, but it doesn't seem that would be the case at the end of the day. Right now, they're talking about Hezbollah. It seems that you cannot defeat Hamas. How you can fight Hezbollah right now? But it
Yeah.
seems that he feels that this conflict would be that sort of conflict that would bring the United States in. That's why he's so insisting to attack Hezbollah.
And what's the United States going to do? Okay. Are we going to pull that 100,000 troops that are currently in Europe out of Europe to send to Israel to fight? How are we going to get them there? So, you would either have to bring in troop transports into Israel, run the risk of those getting shot down, or bring them in on ship and have them land into Israel and then march on up to the border, or have an amphibious landing on the shores of Beirut, which would be countered by Hezbollah and by Iran and maybe by Turkey. So the United States doesn't really have, and what are we going to do? We're going to bomb our way to security. That'll stop those Hezbollah types. How's that worked out against the Houthis? We've used our massive air power to just bomb the crap out of the Houthis. And the Red Sea is still closed, and the ships are still getting hit with rockets and missiles and explosive boats who dare to try to run the blockade. Well, guess what? It doesn't get any better if the United States decides to support Israel against Hezbollah. Because unlike the Houthis, Hezbollah's got a lot more military punch and power than the Houthis do. And they can inflict some serious harm, not just on Israel, but on U.S. forces as well.
Erdogan is going to talk with Bashar al-Assad in Syria. This is a huge
Yeah.
change.
Yeah. Hey, Erdogan's got to eat some crow. He signed on early to Team USA to play in the Let's Get Rid of Bashar al-Assad League. And they lost, man, big time. Because Bashar al-Assad is there. He's growing stronger every day. And, you know, Erdogan's looking around going, these U.S. characters, they don't know what the hell they're doing. Because look at the, I mean, good God, look at the lightweights. You go, in the United States, you got Biden for the last 3 years. In England, you had, was it first Liz Truss? She had the joke. Rishi Sunak. You see how little the guy is? It just looks like, you know, you got to be dancing on top of a wedding cake. And then Starmer replacing Rishi. It's bad news.
When you look at Houthis, the United States together with Saudi Arabia, UAE, were fighting Houthis before the conflict in Gaza. Right now, Saudi Arabia said no to the United States, United Kingdom, leaving them alone against Houthis.
Yeah.
And right now, Bashar al-Assad and Erdogan talking to each other. Saudi Arabia moving toward the east instead of being part of the West. And part of this policy in the Middle East that the United States was dominating before this conflict started was this political moves in the Middle East. They could manage the Middle East through the conflict between Sunni and Shia. Right now, it's all gone. Seems that it's going to get weaker and weaker.
No, I'd say you're exactly right. You know, the United States has squandered its credibility. And really, we thought we could buy our way in there. We never listened to Paul McCartney and John Lennon and the Beatles. Money can't buy you love. You know, so yeah. And the United States basically thought he could use the money as a way to buy our way in. But see, in the process, we're bullying people. It's like, yeah, we'll give you money, man. If you don't do what I want, I'm going to hit you with sanctions. I'm going to punish you. I'm going to make you hurt. I'm going to make you suffer. And after a while, you find people don't want to be around you. You're like, good God, here comes that Uncle Sam. God, what's he going to shake us down for now? What's he going to, you know, don't want to have him over for dinner. You're seeing this, not like the Saudis say, hey, we're going to stop accepting payment in dollars for oil. We're going to accept other currencies. I said, wait a second, we're the only ones who can, you know, no, everybody else gets a shot at the table.